Hello and welcome to this Cloud of Data podcast with your host, Paul Miller. I have been following the emerging data market space for a number of years, trying to understand the ways in which some of the companies who are beginning to appear there relate to one another and how they offer a value proposition to customers. During this series of podcasts, I'm going to be talking to stakeholders from a number of the leading players in the data market space: Microsoft, Factual, Kasabi, InfoChimps, and a number of others. Each of these podcasts will be made available on the Cloud of Data website, as well as through iTunes and perhaps a number of other syndication routes. Please feel free to check back from time to time as new episodes become available. In this episode, I talk with Shayan Desarkar, Chief Executive Officer of Houston-based Datafinity. Unlike a number of other companies in this series, Datafinity gets its data from large-scale web crawls. It goes out, pulls information from websites across the web, and then enriches them, cleans them, harmonizes them, and offers up a single large database from which customers can choose the data they want to download. Here's Shayan to tell us more. Shayan, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around Datafinity, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure thing. First of all, thanks for having me here. So I started my career doing predictive software for various oil field companies here in Houston. Sort of got tired of that scene and struck out doing some other stuff, and eventually wound up at a venture company here in Houston. And out of that company, we started a web crawling service company called 80 Legs, which some folks may be familiar with, where we were providing web crawling as a service at scale. And we still offer that product, but we've sort of added a new product on top of that called Datafinity, which is a search engine for data. And so now we're focusing on providing all sorts of different ways of collecting data, whether it be through our 80 Legs product with web crawling or through our new data search engine product. So I have a strong interest in data since the beginning of my career, and different ways to use it and how it can turn information into great business ideas.
Okay, good. And we'll explore some of that as we go through the call. So you mentioned Datafinity there. What's the elevator pitch?
Sure. So Datafinity, like I said, is a search engine for data. So what we do is we pull out all the structured data that exists in unstructured content on the web, and we make that searchable or queryable like a database. So what we do is we find information on things like businesses and places, social identity data, products, and all sorts of other things. And then we normalize and aggregate all of that data and basically turn it into one, almost like a giant spreadsheet or Excel table, which you can, filter on based on certain columns and things like that. So we try and take all the nice, rich content out there on the web and turn it into a database that you can play around with, download, and use on your own.
So you talk about sort of pulling this content from across the web, where clearly the data exists in all sorts of unpleasant formats. Right. Is the majority of this screen scraping, or are you actually taking data files and working with them?
Yeah, most of everything we do right now is based on web crawling. So we don't take like third-party data sources or anything like that. We just sort of go out on the web in sort of an agnostic fashion. And we have various tools in place that identify interesting data. And then we try and connect those different data points together once we've compiled it all and turn it into one normalized table. So the information could come from a directory site or like a Yellow Pages type site, or it could also come from like an individual company's listings, right? So if we see like, Joe's Taco Hut on a review site and we find their websites, then we can pull out information like the reviews, or we can also pull out information like what their menu is as well and put that all in one single row in our database.
So how do you decide what the valuable information is? I mean, if you're looking at, say, something like that restaurant, how do you decide what its address is? How do you decide what its menu is? How do you decide what's just marketing fluff that's also on the page?
Right. So, I mean, to some extent, any information has some value. What you want to make sure is that the information is accurate, as well represented as possible. And then you can, as long as you have everything available to the consumer of the data or the customer of the data, then they can choose which elements they actually want to purchase, right? So when it comes to doing things like figuring out what the address is, you definitely want to make that very accurate. An address, as an example to use, is something that is pretty well, occurs several times throughout the web for most locations. So you can do a pretty crude metric which says, you know, the most popular choice is probably the correct one. That method may break down on certain cases. Obviously, there's instances where data is not put in correctly, for example, in certain places. When we found, you know, even supposedly trusted sites like, major review sites or something like that might have bad information. So you can do things like authority ranking based on source, or you can use some, you can sort of look at the data offline manually and then decide, well, here's an algorithm that we think will better fit the data. So, there's a wide spectrum of tools to choose from, and we try and use them as judiciously as possible. It is kind of a balancing act between scale and efficiency and accuracy. So you're always trying to sort of walk that line to provide operations that, you know, can provide data in a quick and easy manner without overtaxing yourself. But at the same time, you need to sort of get in there, get your hands dirty once in a while to make sure you're doing a good job.
And do you have any feel for the metrics that would decide how accurate you have to be? If, for example, it is a set of names and addresses or a set of prices or whatever it may be, do you have a feel for how good you have to be before people will start trusting you?
You're asking, like, basically before they're using the data, if we have a good sense for how accurate it is. I think for certain types of data, you can sort of use your own internal ways. You have to go field by field, of course, but you sort of, you tend to have some sort of manual intervention. You have a human eye look at that. Well, this data looks sense. So you can do spot checks like that and trust it that way. But really, I mean, ultimately what it does come down to really is if when the user does use that data, are they getting something that's valuable and trusted from that? So, for example, you know, we have some small businesses that use us to do like lead gen or something, right? So they want to get contact information for potential customers. Well, you know, they're going to take a contact list and use that to contact folks. Well, you know, if the contact information results in like a bad email address or something, well, they're going to tell us that, right? And that gives us feedback that there's something not correct. So we have to go back and look and see what that's happening. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, I think. And it's good to have a feedback loop from your customers that can feed back into operations to make sure that you're always improving your database.
Indeed, yes. So Dataffinity as a company, you said you're based in Houston. Where does the money come from? VC funding, self-financed?
We have a mix of friends and family and institutional investments. About 2.5 million so far.
And you're just getting started, aren't you?
Right. Well, we've been in business a while with our 80 Legs product, but the Dataffinity product itself is still a beta product, very much in beta, and that's under development, so we're working hard on that.
Okay. And in terms of the breadth of your data interest, you said you're out basically crawling the web, building upon the ideas you explored with 80 Legs earlier on. Will you take anything from anywhere, or are you focusing down on particular geographies or particular data types?
Yeah, so right now we do have a focus on five data verticals. So that's businesses/places, identity/social, products, real estate, and news data. And those five are really just a result of what sort of customer demand we've seen from the 80 Lakes side of the business. So we sort of said, well, we've had a lot of requests for this kind of data, so let's try and make this kind of data more available to our customers. In the future, we're going to try and expand out more. We're sort of nailing down our data collection and processing pipeline so that we can easily go into new sources or new data verticals, rather, and collect that and normalize that quickly. It's basically been a customer-driven process.
Okay. And those early verticals, presumably the data lends itself quite well to appearing structured almost by itself. They're described in reasonably consistent ways.
Yeah, it does. And, I mean, a lot of times, you know, there's a subset of each of those data verticals, like the different columns in there, that most customers tend to be interested in. So when you're talking about product data, you know, they want to have price, name, SKU number, things like that. So we have a pretty good sense of what's the most important to get correct and get right and serve well. And then we try and collect additional stuff beyond that because, you know, we're out there crawling, might as well do that. So we still try and get as much stuff in there as possible because it is nice to have like a really wide or deep set of attributes in your data because you can sort of filter, slice and dice it in very interesting ways.
So what does the data look like at your end? Is this a single massive data set or are you segmenting the data set along those verticals as well?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the interesting challenges we work with. We actually represent the data as one giant database, so one giant table, rather. So everything from businesses to news is one in one single table. And that sounds weird, but it works, I'll say, decently enough right now in our back end. We employ certain technologies to make that doable. But of course, when a customer queries for that data, they can put in the specific fields that they want to actually pull back. So they are pulling back a subset of the rows and a subset of the columns as well. And they can define how they want their table to look like using our system.
Presumably, you've got an awful lot of rows and columns, though, for a customer to look through to decide which ones they want.
Yeah, I mean, there's millions and millions of rows and hundreds of columns across the entire database. And so we have a challenge on the back end when it comes to serving that data quickly, which we're in the process of solving. And there's a challenge on the front end to sort of provide an elegant interface to let people access that data. And that's also something we're working pretty hard on. We have a sort of a SQL-style interface right now, which some people get and some people get horribly confused by, which we understand and recognize. So we're working on different ways to address that problem, and hopefully there's a few things we're going to be pushing out in the next month or so that I hope will help those things out.
Okay, good. And in terms of infrastructure then, is this all running on machines in your own data center, or is this sitting out in the cloud somewhere, or have you bought yourself a Cray?
Yeah, so we have a weird infrastructure. So on the 80 Lakes side, we have a grid computing environment, which is similar to like a SETI or Folding at Home. So basically, we have all these volunteer computers out there across the world that opt into our network and then will run crawling for us in exchange for some monetization. I'll call that like a, I kind of joke that that's like a true cloud because it's totally ephemeral and doesn't, it's not just renting someone else's data center. But then all that data that's being crawled from those computers gets fed into a data center that we have. And it's a relatively small footprint considering how much data we ingest. And then that data on the Dataffinity side is also served from that same data center. So I mean, my opinion has always been that at the when you're talking about the kind of data ingestion, data transfer that we're dealing with, the economics tend to not work out when it comes to dealing with the cloud. We actually do use like AWS for some like burst capacity, but that's really only in a pinch when we have to, because the data transfer is super costly compared to what it costs us to do it.
And, well, yes, I would agree. Is the infrastructure homegrown, or are you making use of, you know, existing big data tools, you know, things like MapReduce, things like Hadoop?
Yeah, so that's also a mix. So the ADLEX side is very much homegrown. That grid infrastructure was all kind of our core technology and is sort of our secret sauce. But then on the Dataffinity side, we're using Cassandra and Solr to serve up the data.
Okay, and which presumably is on the front end will be important as well, because developers will understand how to work with those tools.
Yeah, so you know, we might get into some more discussion on this later, but at some point we want to, well, we obviously are going to be providing an API. We have a sort of bare bones API right now, which allows you to serve the data. But eventually we'd like to add like a little extra layer on top of that that allows you to do processing on top of the data sets you pull back. And we do want to follow this, the open source stack up the big data chain, because obviously developers will be familiar with that, so it becomes easy for them to plug into it.
So before we dig into APIs and things, let's talk a little bit about business models. You talked there briefly about monetizing people who give you their infrastructure, lend you their infrastructure for the crawling process. So that's you paying out. You don't pay out for any data, but presumably people are paying you to access the data.
Right.
So what do they pay for? Do they pay a sort of a standing fee and they can do what they like, or are they buying particular views across some of those rows and columns?
Yeah, so all the Dataffinity deals we've done so far are basically people paying on a per record basis, and they tend to define which columns and rows they're interested in. And so we price that out on a per record basis, and the per record price will depend on things like volume, which fields you're pulling back. Certain fields are more valuable than others. And so that comes to like a total data set cost.
Okay, and you would know that up front before you actually ran a query and got data?
Yeah, well, so they, through the website, the idea is that you run the query, it generates the counts for you, and then it prices it out for you. You can see the price before you buy. Because we're in beta mode, we've sort of been serving customers offline so far. So we'll kind of do that internally and then tell them the price, and then they'll say yes or no, and then they'll ship it off to them.
Okay, and we may touch on some of the how you decide how much data is worth in a moment. What sorts of things are people asking for? You know, is it give me the location of every taco restaurant in Texas, or is it more nuanced or broader, or what?
Well, I can give you some fairly specific examples. So, actually, some of our larger deals right now are filling out databases for other data providers. So some of the traditional players in the market are interested in using us because, you know, they see us as a source for easy access to web data. So they're using us to fill in aspects of their database that they're unable to, or we do in a better way. But then we also have other sorts of use cases we have some retailers that have been using us for pricing intelligence or marketing purposes. We've had small businesses using us for lead gen purposes. And then we have a whole wide variety of use cases, of course, on the ADLEX side, everything from social media monitoring to copyright protection stuff to all sorts of things. So all that sort of data, some of those niche use cases aren't in Dataffinity right now, but we're going to eventually transition them into it.
Okay. And you're pulling this content off a lot of web pages. Are you beginning to see any of the value that people have been promising for a while from say, microformats or from schema.org? You know, where some of the structure is actually getting embedded into the page ready for you to take, or not yet?
So, I mean, I'll be clearly honest, we don't even look for semantic markup right now. we kind of have our own tools to pull out that data. But that's not to say that we don't think that's useful. It's just we've had success not relying on it so far. I think that stuff will be useful, but perhaps only after we see it on either on particular sites that are really data rich or on a lot of different sites where it makes sense for us to invest the time to actually, you know, build extractors for that and stuff like that. So, I mean, I hope that effort continues and I'd like to see it grow. But like I said, right now we're having success in a way that doesn't rely on that. So, yeah.
And do you think it would lend you any value? Presumably it would make the process a little quicker and a little more accurate. Do you see some big promise down the line if more of this markup is embedded into pages?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a race between the adoption of those microformats and versus the ability to build like intelligent extraction tools, right? So whichever one becomes really good first is the one that's going to win, I think. At least from our perspective, right? I realize there's other use cases for microformats and stuff like that. But as far as extracting data goes, whichever one, it's either the adoption ramps up a lot really quickly or we get really good at pulling it out automatically. And honestly, I mean, both would be great. But we're going to go with whichever one is better for us.
Okay. And we mentioned earlier on that you don't at the moment take formal data sets. Would you be open to that? You know, if Best Buy, for example, came along and said, rather than crawling our product catalogue, we'd like to give it to you as a database. Do you want it?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be open to that. I think it's a situation where we'd want to make sure that, you know, we have a fairly unrestricted license to that data. So we wouldn't want it in a case where, you know, Best Buy would have to approve every single person that bought that data. We'd want to treat it as just another source that gets fed into it. And, you know, an ideal situation for us and that kind of thing would be like, you pay us, or I'm sorry, we'll pay you some percent of what we earn from it. That's totally fine, but also recognize that there's other sources coming into that. There's no reason for us to rely exclusively on that data. So I'm not sure how an arrangement like that would work, but I think it would sort of go against the grain of traditional data licensing agreements where there tend to be a lot of restrictions on how it can be used and who uses it and stuff like that.
And have you had any cases where, you know, some of the companies whose websites you're taking this content from are coming and saying, hang on a minute, that's ours?
Yeah, so we've had some issues where we're focusing like exclusively on particular websites and things like that. But that was really more on the ADLEX side. I think going into the Dataffinity side, I see that not being as much a problem because A, we're sort of treating all these different websites as, we don't really care what they are. We just are crawling across them and hundreds of other sites, and whichever ones have information, we're pulling them out. And the second thing is, you know, we also see ourselves as a search engine. So, in the sense that, you know, people are just using us to search the web and generating a very different type of search results, and you know, they may go to the source for that data if they want to pull it out. You know, I'm not sure how common that's going to be. But I don't see what we're doing is any different than like what a Google or Bing is doing. We're just presenting the crawled content in a very different way.
Okay. So presumably a Google or a Bing could do it too. You know, if you're successful enough, they may decide that they want to present a data-rich view on their crawl.
Yeah, that, I suppose that's always possible, and that's probably a good problem to have if that happens.
So. Well, yes, indeed. So in terms of accessing the data then, you said that you have a basic API at the moment, but looking for a richer one. How do people interact with the data at the moment? You mentioned sort of an SQL-based query form. Is that the main way in at the moment?
Yeah, so on the website, what you can do right now is, what it does is you can open up a terminal environment and just put in a SQL command into this little command line prompt. And it's sort of like a dumbed-down SQL, so very basic commands. There's only one command, which is a select command. And then you put it in and then hit enter, and then it generates a preview of the data. You can look through that preview, and then you can look at the counts to see like how many records there are that match your query, you know, the different fill rates, and then you can choose to buy that data if you want. And then we also have the API, which is actually very similar, except all you're doing is using a script or an application to input that SQL command and sending it off to us through a RESTful service. And then you get your response back in a JSON format.
So you get JSON back from the API. What do you get back from the on the website?
The website is sort of the preview, of course, is just like a web page or HTML view. And then you can download the data in CSV, XML, or JSON.
Okay. And how responsive is the API? I mean, presumably the main use at the moment will be to get a data dump back. But if I actually want to start building it into an application, which I want to be responsive, will the API be able to handle that?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we're working on right now. I'll be honest, I don't feel that it's as responsive as we need it to be right now. But we're working on various tools to make our database faster, more responsive. So that is the end goal, is to allow developers to use our API, our database, as a data source for their applications. And so we just have to work through some technology challenges to make that possible.
Okay. So data then, you're pulling this data from web pages all across the web where it's freely available. You know, if I wanted to visit them all in turn and read it myself, I could. What do you add to the data? If you get a menu or an address or whatever it may be off a website, and you put that into your table, do you do any cleaning on that? Do you do any reconciliation?
Yeah, so the value we provide is, first off, we're pulling from multiple sources. So that means chances are our data is going to be a lot more accurate than any single source. I mean, I've seen examples even on Google where they're missing certain values that exist on, let's say, the company's webpage, right? So pulling from multiple sources gives you more accurate data. It also gives you, or I'm sorry, we also have the ability to collect data more quickly because of the scale that our 80 legs backend provides. So because we have this massive crawling infrastructure, we can pull from multiple sources very quickly, which means you're going to get data that's as up-to-date as possible. And then I should also say that because we have the ability to run very specific crawls and run queries for very particular types of data, we can serve very niche data interests. So we've had a lot of folks actually come to us after not being able to find this data anywhere else. So one great example, which is actually like a really common use case, is that, you know, a business wants to be able to, you know, contact potential customers. And a lot of the databases out there, especially amongst some of the newer players, don't have that kind of information or the ability to do that. And we've had customers come to us saying, you know, I tried some of these guys, you know, what they have is great, but they don't have these particular fields, right? Can you help me out? And so a lot of times we end up being this, you tried everything else, but that you knew about, you've come to us because, you know, we are sort of like the guys that can get it when everything else fails. And so we have the ability to do that and then serve that data in a way that is really easy for them to get.
And do you do anything to, I guess, to wrap context around the data or to standardize it? So, I don't know, you scrape two menus for two different restaurants and one is in dollars and one is in pounds. Would you either reconcile them so they show in the same currency, or would you make sure that it's very clear that one is in dollars and one is in pounds?
Yeah, so I mean, in that specific example, we would show the currency that each of the items is in. So we would use the three-letter code for USD or EUR along with the price. So that would be pretty identifiable. In other cases, what we do is, in other cases, we would basically normalize the value and present it in one format. But I'm sort of blanking on what an example of that would be.
Okay, temperatures or distances or something like that, where there are clear units.
One good example probably is like on real estate, you have like square footage, right? And we've actually gone through some European real estate websites. So we actually will represent data in both the square footage and the square meters.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And presumably that's the sort of thing you begin to present to potential customers as a very tangible value add.
Right. So, that sort of comes down to the usability of the data. You want to try and have the customer avoid as much post-processing of the data as possible. You know, someone like us, we're not going to provide like analytics on top of the data, but we are going to make it so that you don't have to munch about the data anymore to ingest it yourself, right? So if you're looking like the real estate example, if you, for some reason you are a European person looking for real estate in the US, that data will be presented in square meters that you might be used to. Now, there's a certain extent to which it becomes a little ridiculous. Obviously, we're not going to like have the property value be represented in every single currency, but we might represent it in, you know, a few standard currencies or something like that.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Okay. And you mentioned there that you wouldn't get into analytics necessarily. How far up the stack towards the rich functionality would you go? I mean, at the moment, you're providing a valuable service. You're providing access to this harmonized set of data from across the web. But you're then relying upon the customer to do whatever it is they want to do with the data. Is there a place for you beginning to offer more of that yourselves? You know, so you're offering a more fully featured set of products, which presumably you can charge more money for.
Yeah, so that is something we're eventually interested in. But I don't think it would be prudent to tackle that quite yet, or at least until we feel we've really got a good handle on serving this harmonized data to begin with. Once we have that market cornered, I think we will start looking at what else we can do for future growth. But I wouldn't want to spread ourselves too thin right now. And I think that's sort of a general thing that's going to happen with this market anyway, is that right now you have guys focus on their individual silos along the data value chain, as it were. But, you know, as the market matures, there's going to be, you know, strong players in each of these segments, and then they're going to look to see where their other growth opportunities are. So you're going to see folks moving up and down the chain. So I hope that is us in the future. So we'll see what happens.
So how do you decide what a fact is worth?
So, I mean, that's kind of like a, you know, any sort of good or service, right? Its value depends on, I guess, like two things, right? It's like, how much time or money have you saved the customer by just giving it to them rather than them having to do it? And then how much additional value are they going to derive after they've bought it from you? And that sort of boils down to essentially what will the market bear for that data or that good, right? Now, in our case, we have there's a track record for different types of data and what folks have been willing to pay for. So there are certain fields or attributes that definitely have a lot of value. I mean, like contact information is hugely valuable, things like that. And then there's certain fields that are less valuable, still important, but less, you know, you can't charge as much for them. Things like, you know, an address or a latitude, longitude coordinate, you know, that has value, but it's not something, for whatever reason, that a lot of folks are willing to pay a lot for. So what we do is we sort of segment the data based on these fields and assign values to each of those fields, which is what gets reflected in our pricing.
And those values can then flex, presumably, as you test the market.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, right now, like I said, we're serving data in kind of an offline manner while we work through our beta. And so some of the deals are sort of a back and forth process, how the customer values the data. And that gives us information on how we should price future deals and how we should price data through our website. So again, sort of going back to that customer feedback, once we get some experience, as we're getting experience with customers, we get a pretty good sense of what folks are willing to pay for. And so you can sort of, you know, eventually you get to a point where you can confidently price your data. And if people balk at that price, you can say, well, that's not a huge concern because we know this is a fair price and something that folks in general are willing to pay for. So we try and reach that point.
And yeah, I mean, that's a case of working through the beta and getting more customers, isn't it? How many customers do you need before you know you've got your prices right?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that each deal isn't wildly different from the next, so you sort of have a consistent feel for it. I mean, for us, actually, our VP of sales has a lot of experience working in the traditional information brokering. He used to work at Info Group, and so he's had a lot of experience selling business and consumer data, and so he has a pretty good sense of what folks are willing to pay for that. So we go off of that as a base point and then tweak a little bit based on how competitive we want to be, what additional value we think we're providing on top of the other data, and so on.
Okay. Now, a lot of the other companies in the data market space are leaning far more towards, you know, discrete recognizable data sets than you are. So right. They have a tension there in terms of branding. You know, to what extent do I portray my brand as a data market, and to what extent do I play on the brand of the US Census or whatever it may be, you know, whatever data set I happen to have. That's presumably not a problem for you. You're just you're playing on the Datafinity brand and the web.
Yeah, exactly. We, like I said, we treat all our data sources as just one blob of stuff that we then sift through. And our goal is to provide quality Datafinity data, I guess. And so going back to the previous question about how do folks, you know, trust your data, well, when they start using our data and see that they're able to use it effectively and in their business processes, they're going to understand that the data we're providing is quality data, and is very useful. And so they're going to come back to our source as a primary source for that data. So I think we, based on what we're able to do as far as collecting data and presenting it as one source that is well put together, I mean, I feel very confident of our ability to do that. So I think we can build a good brand around Datafinity as a trusted source and a quality source and an accurate source.
What are you going to do to those people squatting on datafinity.com?
You know, hopefully they give up once their traffic bill goes to the roof. So,
indeed. So I should mention Datafinity that we're talking about is at datafinity.net.
Yeah.
Presumably, a lot of your costs are fixed. You're doing the crawl, the regular crawl, all the time, no matter how many customers you've got. So presumably, once you start getting lots of customers, that's straight revenue, is it?
Most of the case, yes. Obviously, there's we do have customers that come to us with new data needs that we haven't been able to fill yet or don't have in our database. But like I said, we have the ability to go out and find sources for that data and pull it out and stuff like that. So there is a variable cost based on certain customers, but as we grow, that becomes a smaller percentage. And you're right, it's something that scales pretty nicely.
And in terms of that growth, how do you set about growing from where you are now to become presumably what you want to be?
Well, right now, I think it's all about making sure we have a nice sort of feedback loop in our data pipeline to make sure that we're filling out our database, growing the database at a good rate, making sure all the data is accurate and things like that. And then we have to be able to serve that data effectively. So that means a quality UI, a good customer experience. Those are the few things that we're really focused in on right now. And I feel if we can hit those things, then we're going to be, you know, we hope to see a large uptick in demand. And so after that becomes, you know, questions that, you know, I will be able to think about then. But, you know, like I said, we're still in beta, so we need to be able to deliver a quality product. And we feel confident once we get that, we'll have a lot of good problems to have, I guess.
Yeah. So is there any role for ground truthing in this, you know, in the GIS and remote sensing world? There used to be a case for going out and actually standing on the ground and seeing whether or not what the satellite was telling you was there was actually in the field. Is there a role for that in the sort of data you're gathering, actually going out and checking facts physically?
Yeah, so I don't know. That thought has sort of come across my mind, like once we, you know, if assuming we ever get like super big and stuff like that, you know, at what point do we need to start doing that? I guess right now, all I can say is that'd be really cool to be able to do that. But at the same time, it's sort of like, I guess at what point do we actually need to do that? And I'm not sure what that point is. Because as the web evolves, presumably that information is sort of being fed in organically and we're collecting information one way or the other. So I don't know when that sort of threshold gets crossed. I will tell you that we have had sort of fun brainstorming sessions where, you know, in the distant future, you know, we could presumably come to a point where you know, we're pushing out mobile apps that we give away for free because they're pulling data back for us, right? So that's how we monetize those apps. And so that gives us like the access to certain types of data that no one else has or gets access to it before anyone else has. So that could also be sort of an interesting thing that develops out of this data ecosystem. And I guess you're kind of seeing that now, but it's sort of been, I mean, you do see that, you know, with everything from Google to Facebook to Twitter. I mean, they're basically monetizing data through ads. But this, I guess, would be a more of a direct monetization of data.
Yes, I guess so. And and really sort of getting a good feedback loop going from the people who are using you.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Makes sense. So just before we wrap up then, this whole series of podcasts has loosely been exploring the space for data markets. Do you think this is a useful term, a useful concept, and a useful way of describing all of you, or not?
Well, I guess I see two potential definitions for it. One is sort of smaller in scope, in that if what you are is a data market, where you are literally a marketplace where buyers and sellers meet together, that's one definition. But then you can zoom out, and the entire industry of folks that provide data one way or the other, that's also a data market, I suppose. I mean, I've used the word data market to refer to the industry category. So I find that useful. Sometimes I do say data industry just so people understand what I'm saying. But it is a market. So as long as we understand that it's a, you know, it refers to the industry category and keep to that definition, I think it's a good one to use.
Okay, so not the first definition you gave with the buyers and sellers, because clearly you don't have them. You just have buyers.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, that was interesting, Cheyenne. I mean, we first spoke when 80 Legs was just getting started, so it's been fascinating to see how you've moved on from there. And I look forward to seeing where Datafinity goes. So thank you very much for your time, and good luck moving through the beta and out the other side. Thank you.
Good. Thanks as well.
Thanks. Bye.